Dr. Brastax, good morning.
Good morning, Juma.
Hi, good morning, sir.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Okay. All right, I want to discuss two things with you this morning. And I can start first, ma'am, with this whole issue of the complaint made by a number of public service vehicle owners. Okay. The question I want to ask this morning, because before I accuse, I want to ask the question first. Because it was brought to my attention that a number of these ZR vehicles that are on the roads of this country are driven by persons who are not the owner. You get that?
Yes. I'm aware of that. They employ persons to drive their vehicles.
Right. Good. Now, my understanding through my research, ma'am, was that the person who leased this vehicle from the owner is responsible for the petrol that is placed in the same vehicle. So they fill it up as they receive it from the owner for the next day working, and then whatever is left after the owner's their rental comes out, will form the salary of both the driver and the conductor, if there is a conductor. That has been my understanding. Right? Mm-hmm. So what is interesting, since that we have come to this place, ma'am, what is interesting is to find out the percentage of how many of these public service vehicles are leased. And then if you find the percentage of how much at least, then you'll be able to unravel the argument about this large, about this road tax, a gasoline in road tax. Because if the owner, ma'am, has passed the gasoline or diesel bill on to the lessee, so if you can follow me.
Yes.
And he's not now picking up that tab. He's not in a position to make a case about the gasoline,
yes,
or the diesel. Mm-hmm. You're with me so far? You're not with me?
It is left to the driver, yes.
It is left to the driver. So he's not in a position. That's why it is important for the government to establish how much of these vehicles are leased to these drivers, to then be in a position to ascertain if their argument is holding any water or not. The same applies for hired vehicles in this country. Because if I have 6 hired vehicles and I only put in a quarter tank of gas, all the gasoline in the vehicle is being hired a week, 2 weeks, or 3 weeks, that is borne by the person who hires the vehicle.
Yes.
And not the person, not the owner of the hired vehicle. Mm-hmm. You with me?
Yes.
So sometimes when I hear, and I'm not knocking Marsley, but I want to make the point that the government must be extremely careful when certain arguments come to the fore against them in relation to any pressure that has been brought to bear on them relative to the decision that they would have made.
But if I were an owner and my driver was accustomed to getting, let's say, $500 a week, and same thing obtains, he purchases the diesel, he does his own thing, etc. He brings back the vehicle at a particular level.
Mm-hmm.
And he now has less than the 500. He, the driver, mm-hmm. is going to be making representation for himself and speaking to the owner and asking the owner, can't you do something about this? Can't you put pressure on government because we ain't getting what we used to get before? That kind of conversation maybe what has driven Morris Lee and his colleagues to make that type of representation. If you understand what I mean, because
I fully understand what you're saying.
Right.
But what I don't believe, ma'am, mm-hmm. You can help me here. What I don't believe is that this has been the case. I think what has more been the case in as it relates to the noise that I'm hearing in certain quarters is that they believe that bringing the pressure to bear on the government, because understand that the ultimate goal is to see if they can get Basri at $5, which I know that the responsible prime minister and the person of Mayor Motley, will, the Honourable Mayor Motley, will not do. But I think that that's the crux of their argument rests in seeing if they can force the government hand in this direction. But okay, the point has to be made, ma'am, that any person who is to make such a claim has to be the person who's suffering the fallout. I am not sufficiently convinced that they are sufficiently interested in the well-being of the individuals who lease their vehicles to the extent where they can come forward to make a case for them. And the reason why I'm saying this, ma'am, is because of the unruly behavior that we've been having from time to time over the years, and nothing seemed to any strides have seemed to be made in relation to curbing the lawlessness. So how do you place pressure on the government to in attempt to roll back a decision that they've made, and then you're not exerting the same pressure in trying to curb the very lawlessness for which a lot of people complain about? I'm at a loss. So I just throw that out there so that, you know, for others to think, right?
Okay.
The next thing I want to speak about, ma'am, is the, I can't remember his name, but the caller alluded to Dr., what's the guy that assigned to
Kevin Greenidge.
Dr. Kevin Greenidge, that's okay. Right. And he believed that Dr. Kevin Greenidge doesn't have the authority to speak on any layoffs. But if he had been following Dr. Kevin Greenidge, he would recognize that he's speaking after the Prime Minister at all times. Never once had he spoke before the Prime Minister in relation to the any massive layoffs and the amount and the figures and so on. Right? Because when, ma'am, if you cast your mind back, when the figure was thrown around about 4,000, the Prime Minister stood in front of Parliament and made the point that it was not true.
Yeah, I remember.
Sunday, when she had the press conference, she said not more than 1,500. So any pronouncement that Dr. Kevin Greenidge would have made was made in light of the commentary coming from the Prime Minister. The point I want to make, though, however, ma'am, having cleared up that, right, is that I believe that the government has a role and a responsibility and a duty to now inspire and motivate those persons who are going to be retrenched. And this is what I mean when I say to inspire and motivate. The government now has a program they intend to roll out through the Ministry of Commerce by the Honourable Dwight Sutherland, the small
loans.
Entrepreneurs,
yes.
Right, the $5,000 loans and
yes.
So on. My take on this, ma'am, is that any person who is now about to be retrenched, who has an idea, a business idea, and want to get it off the ground immediately to suffer any fallout from the consequences of the retrenchment program, that there should be, their application should be given priority over and above existing entrepreneurs who all they want is to seek extra funding to boost their current business that they have going. You follow the point I'm making?
I follow you, but it's laughable. So to move from idea to enterprise, there is some, of course, some business training, some... Mm-hmm. You need to go through a process. If a person doesn't have a business plan or a real understanding of what strategy they would employ, how they're going to run their business, etc., and they just want some money because they think they're going to lose their job, you're suggesting that they should be the first person to get $5,000 above a person who is running a business, a fledgling business, and has had a track record and wants to get a little bit more for a boost. That's essentially what you just said.
Right.
I think it's laughable. It's laughable simply because the organization that is disbursing the funds, normally this one falling under the Ministry of Commerce this time around, but you would have fund access on those people who go through your plans and tell you whether they're up for rigor, whether the risk is too high, etc. And they determine usually that persons who have had a track record or who are in the process already, they're the ones who are more able to pay than a person who just has an idea and doesn't even have a business concept. or so, you know, so I wouldn't necessarily share that view that you have for sure, because if you look at the rate of the risks and look at the rate of the businesses that last, those ones usually fail quicker.
Right. But having said that, I'm happy that you shared that. I'm happy that you shared your thoughts with me. But having said that, what you're essentially saying then is that the, because my understanding of this small business loan was primarily designed to help cushion the fall of some of these same individuals. So if these individuals have to go through training and all these types of things before they can have access to
I'm saying you posited that a person who currently has a job but has an idea should be quicker.
No, I don't. People who suffer any fallout, you know.
Right. They should be more readily be able to access the $5,000 than a person who has a fledgling business or a person who's already in business. And your way of saying it is that they just want money to prop up their reserves. And I'm saying that there are a lot of young persons and persons who've been out there who've been in business for a while, who have had conversations with the same administration, which more or less would have prompted the same $5,000 loan based on them going through their constituencies, etc. So you cannot disadvantage those persons who exist already only for the persons who want another business. Who's to say that those people don't just want $5,000 to shore up their own reserves and don't want a business?
But that may also be true. That's why vetting becomes important. But the point I want to make is that if I'm to follow your argument to its logical conclusion, the point I'm making is that any person who's retrenched.
My argument essentially is, though, I'm not making a case for persons who have businesses. I'm making a case for removing that discrimination.
That's fine.
Case is about.
Right, okay, fine. But the point I want to drill home to, ma'am, is that if perhaps, pre-adventure, that it might be the government's decision to have these individuals who are coming forward for small business loans, to be properly trained and or have some skill or idea or whatever you have you in managing a small business.
Yes.
If you are saying that this is more likely to be a criteria that will be
No. Bear in mind, I have no knowledge of the trust loans,
right,
or how they're going to be administered, etc. I'm just responding to your suggestion.
And
suggesting that you remove the discrimination.
Right. But you've made a valid point. So the point I'm making is that if this now becomes the government's criteria and the disbursement of the small business loans, it means that these individuals who will be retrenched, for whom the same trust loans were targeting, will be at a disadvantage. You get the point I'm making?
If at all, what I'm saying is the only reason why you should get a trust loan.
Bear in mind,
I'm saying that without any knowledge of how the trust loans are going to be disbursed.
Don't use my argument. I understand, but it may very well be because that government at the end of the day still has to ensure that those persons who come forward, you understand, and receive this funding in the name of a small entrepreneur, one, has the ability to repay the money, and two, that whatever it is they're seeking to get into as a small entrepreneur is one that would be able to sustain the loan repayment and themselves at the same time.
But that's the vision. That's the vision, and that has been articulated prior to the election and subsequently. Post-election, I remember Minister Sutherland talking about who it is targeted at. And I must say, there was no mention specifically about persons who would have been retrenched. It was persons who have a business or who want to start up a business, etc. So we're adding some more variables in there.
But okay, I remember that the government is on, I think the Prime Minister on Sunday is on record as talking about the digital recording at government and so on, and that persons who are retrenched can find employment in these areas. Now, if you are going to get involved any program for which the government will now procure to you as an individual, obviously you've got some kind of mechanism. Something has to be in place for you to proceed going forward relative to the same program the Prime Minister mentioned. So the point I'm making is that I am curious to find out, right, from the government, what will be the criteria going forward as it relates to these
small loans,
if I'm to take into consideration the commentary that you would have just made in response to what I said.
There was a launch last week, mm-hmm. and there were persons, I think it was Fund Access, but it was falling under the Ministry of Commerce and either one of their agencies, and they talked a little bit about the trust loans. I saw some of it in the press as well, so if you want to revert or if we have anyone who can share that information with us, that would be useful. But I remember it last week being spoke about. I think there was the launch of the trust loans as well. So
yeah, I'm interested different because I'll be having a number of people querying. I don't have all the answers, contrary to popular belief. But the truth is that we don't want to be shooting in the dark. We want people to understand that if that's why I start by saying that we want to motivate and inspire. And I think it is the role of the government because they are the ones who are carrying out the exercise at this particular point in time. And that they must inspire and motivate these individuals because it is not easy, ma'am, for a person. I remember when my contract at the National Conservation Commission was terminated by the minister. It's not easy when you have loans and have other things doing and somebody just, a board just meet and terminate a contract that you had and then you're unemployed and you're going to be figuring out how you can pay this and how you can pay that and how you can do this and how you can do that. Mm-hmm. So I know very well how it feels, you know, to not to have a job. So I believe going forward that someone must come forward and seek to inspire and motivate these individuals at this particular point in time as it relates to this whole retrenchment exercise that government is now undertaking. That's all I want to say.
Yes, and I'm sure the mitigation unit set up in the Prime Minister's office would be able to start some public engagement to ensure that persons are aware of where they can go and where they can turn. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Down to Brass Tacks. We have a number of callers on the line. We also have some WhatsAppers. I'll go straight to the lines. Down to Brass Tacks.
Morning.
Good morning.
I'm on the line.
You're on the line, yes.
Yes, good morning. I want to say that sometime back, the governor of the central bank, he said that he wanted 4,500 people to go home from the public sector. Or nobody, Mr. Affley, nobody said anything to him. And Miss Molly never had known what she was going into. And she was always saying, no, not 4,005. The most is 1,500. And nobody seems to understand who was asking for the 4,500 that knows about the money and the problem. And everybody is on Molly's back that are trying her best very hard. And I can't see why. I wonder if those DLP people are vexed, if they are sorry, or if they are envy or grudgeful because she's getting through. And the country is a lot better today than last 2 months or when she took over. But it's not Miss Motley that was asking for the large set of people to go home. It was the central bank, the former central bank governor. And nobody speaks about him. And he asked for 3 times Miss Motley people. 3 times. And he knows about what it was going on. She did not know. She never knew what she was going into. Perhaps she thought it was a bed of roses when she took over. But day by day, things are opening every day. So these people are being jealous. I feel they are jealous with the outside help and what she's getting. And you cannot be so stupid to want to see your country fall. Come on.
I actually attended a presentation early this year or late last year. I think it's early this year, January. And there was actually a proposal on the table, a person will remain nameless, to do some restructuring of the economy and send home 1,500 people in the first year. And now that's a number that we have come up upon in this current restructuring. So maybe. I'll let you continue.
Yeah, but I was wondering why the central bank governor was asking for 45.
Over a time period, I think his presentation spoke to over a 3 to 4 year period.
With
persons receiving their severance, etc. Per person up to $60,000 for severance, regardless of your level of employment, what stage you're at, whether you're at clerical level or administrative level, or whether you're in senior management or so.
Oh, I see. Another thing, the guy that spoke from St. John that said he's the Ecky Becky, I think he was just making sport and having fun. So I don't think nobody should take him serious. And when the other guy said just now that if the dear people want to come back, they should get him, that's a joke. That man was making fun. People know it's fun. We don't want to cry him down or say anything bad about him. But he was making a lot of fun.
He sounded very serious and resolute in his positioning. So,
no,
if you call it fun.
I call it fun because that it appears that he's hurt because that his party lose. So that is all he could say. He can't say. And I call it for you to lose your party with 30 seats to love. Somebody will have to be making fun now. I never hear that in Barbados yet.
Okay.
Might be 33 or 20-something, but not 30 love. That was a serious matter. So I think he was making fun. So I think what I want people to do, see this country as ours. Everybody love their country and stop with the pulling down of what Miss Motley is doing because she's going ahead. She's very serious and she's getting it done. So please, everybody, join hands and appreciate it. Because that Reverend Astley, I wonder if he had got a ministry, what would he be saying today? I wonder if he had a ministry, because if he did not run on this ticket, he couldn't get a seat neither. He couldn't even get a vote.
This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning. You're on the air. Good morning. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hello.
I'm hearing you, but you seem to be dropping out. You're probably having a challenge with your line.
I'm having a challenge with my line. You hear me now?
I can hear you.
Hello?
I can hear you.
Yeah. It seems as though that then you are not in agreement with what some people want or think. You become public enemy number one. I don't agree with everything that some of the callers said, but that does not make them foolish. It does not mean that they're talking rubbish.
Good posture.
Right? No. There are a lot of contributing factors that have us in this situation. A lot. And one of them, one of the major ones, is the non-collection of funds, millions of dollars owed to government.
Okay.
Another one I always ask, where is that? Governments insist on renting buildings. I have so many government buildings that just need to be restored. There are bundled engineers in government, and a perfect example is the government electrical department building, the one that they're in now. That was one of the worst buildings that you could have come across. Engineers from MTW bought it back. Look down at the old training unit, building down to the bottom of the Plain Road. Same thing, and left there to just go to waste.
Beautiful property.
We had a building
under
construction.
Very, very beautiful property over there.
Yeah, we had a building almost completed by the last government, by the party in office at Sherburn. It was demolished and replaced by a car park. And now office space is being rented from Sky Mall to host the Ministry of Culture. The people who are getting sent home are not responsible for that. they're not responsible for these decisions. I saw people yesterday cry. I saw it. People who just rent a hard car, not as a luxury, as a means of transport, to be put into this situation, no. The money that they're going to get is going to look like a lot, but with the financial commitments that they have, it's going to go in a hurry. I heard the Prime Minister say in relation to CBC and how overstaffed it is, why, and with the technology that exists, I wonder why the same principle can't be applied as regarding the overstaffed ministries in relation to ministers. In this day and age, in the age of technology, she certainly cannot convince me that it's about work. And let me tell you something. All of these people are being sent home. When they go, it does not mean that their duties are going to cease to exist. The duties have to be continued, and they are going to be continued by those who are remaining at no extra pay. So that, you see, this is why people can't let me know. This is why I can't have friends, because I cannot keep my mouth shut on certain matters. I can't. And I wouldn't. The unions, too. I mean, I have said this before. Why not a salary decrease? Why not a salary cut?
They have to go to Parliament and change some legislation for that. I remember when Arthur, in his previous, just after the 8% cut, or should I say subsequent to the 8% cut in his administration, he would have made some changes to the legislation, which does not any longer permit a government to reduce a salary from whatever it has been at. You can, in this scenario where you're making someone redundant, that's another way of dealing with it. But you can no longer reduce a salary based on what took place.
They look at these persons went 10 years of severe hardship. Very severe hardship. The only increases that they had imposed on them was taxes. As Bob Marley said in one of his songs, there were the living sacrifice and to pay the price. You know, these kind of things worries me. Why not all ministers asked to give up their allowances, all of them? I was saying yesterday, at least let them keep one. Don't let them keep none. You can't go out people like getting thousands of dollars of money when salary might come, and you're going to ask us to sacrifice nothing. But the little man who may have one working person, people like they don't know the implications that this is going to have, you know. Why not go after the former government that collected the most taxes in the history of Barbados, and we as a people have nothing to show for it? So my question is, having collected so many taxes, where has the money gone? Mm-hmm. Where is it? You still got roads in disrepair, no garbage trucks, no buses, and not bearing Miss Motley today. The ambulances that the got, NASCAR gives them, where the money gone? Why not go after them? Why target innocent people?
Okay. You made a good contribution asking some questions relative to where have some monies that have been collected, where is going and what it was spent on, and has it really addressed the issues for which it has been collected? This is Down to Brass Tacks. This is Down to Brass Tacks. You are on the air. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Lisa.
Yes, good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Johnson. And good morning, listeners. I'd like to come to this program and draw people's attention to the truth of God's word. So here I go. I'm just going to ask a question, but you don't have to answer. Just think about it. How many of you have come home from work late in the evening, say 9 o'clock, from a long, hard day of work, tired, have a shower, have something to eat, and then hit the sack, as we say in Barbados. And as you lay there in that bed, saying where they're going to sleep now, you just try to remember, I locked the door, And then, the matter weird, you hear a little squeaking in the house, or the garbage can in the yard falls down. And you get up out of your bed and you go and check the door, and it locked. That is what you call anxiety. But that is your imagination. We live in a time now, madam, that they have have a lot of anxiety that causes, or got a problem that causes anxiety that are real. For instance, we have some people who might be going home soon, and their anxiety level might be rising to the fact that they may got mortgages to pay, bills to pay, children to stay in school, etc. Or we may have an illness in the family. Probably may be heart problems, cancer problems, anything like that can raise our anxiety levels. But what does the Bible say about anxiety? It says that anxiety can weigh us down. And Jesus alluded to that. He said in one of his illustrations about the seed that fell among thorns, and he gave the explanation of the thorns when he said, due to the anxiety of this system and the deceptive power of riches, it choked the word. But he also said, do not be anxious about what you may eat or drink, because our Father in heaven knows these things. And this is something that the word of God, it doesn't take away the problems that we face, but it can help us to cope with it. Mm-hmm. This is something I would like to draw to our listeners' hearts. Anxiety is there, and it will affect us. But we just have to trust in Jehovah with all our hearts and do not rely on our own understanding. And it will help us to cope with the present situation that we are facing now in Barbados and throughout the whole entire world. Because the Bible said at 1 John chapter 5, verse 19, I think it is, we know we originate with God, but the whole world is learning the power of the wicked one. So as long as we're living until we come to the very last days of this system of things, we will have anxiety, we're going to have challenges, but we need to turn and trust our God, but we have to get to know him. So thank you, Lisa, for allowing me to share that with our listeners. I hope it reaches somebody's heart. Thank you very much, madam.
Thank you so much. We really do need to... I started last week's presentation talking about hope, and I got some interesting feedback, particularly from our WhatsAppers. But I am a firm believer in hope, and you've just added a piece there about not being anxious. I thought you were going to finish the verse and, you know, be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication, let your requests be made known unto God. And there are some people who believe in God and therefore they can turn to God. It isn't everyone who has that belief, and therefore that exhortation is really for those people who believe. And I do know that there are persons who do not trust in their own understanding, but they look to Jehovah to guide them and to lead them in all truth. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Lisa?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning to you, ma'am. Now, there's a couple little things I would like to talk about, first of all. Mm-hmm. First of all, I would like to thank a lady from Flow. Name is Janine. Mm-hmm. She called me this morning, very nice, and explained things to me. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Janine. The next one I talk about is in the 5th or the 6th of this month, we have to buy a new tire. It was blown out. Couldn't, because the way it dropped in the hole, mm-hmm. it couldn't be, you know, the tire couldn't mend.
Yes.
Now, would you believe Saturday I went to town, come back, coming around Kayville, there's some bumps there. Mm-hmm. And next thing you realize, do you know we have another blowout and another tire again?
Oh, no.
Yes, and I would like to thank a young man, HRM6322, that when my husband was trying to change a tire, he stopped his car, a nice, beautiful little car, to run out, and in about 3 minutes, he changed the tire for us. Mm-hmm. I would like to thank him very much indeed. Two tires this month. Mm-hmm. Two tires, and we bought one of them early last year. And it was blown out again. Could not fix.
Did you go to
NTW? Won't because it's, no. It's for what? You know, it's not worth it.
It may take a while, but you are entitled to compensation if you...
Nah, leave. It's okay. We just leave that because right now, I serve for the government. They don't have any money to pay it. We may, while my die and we don't get that money. So I just leave it like that. You know, I'm only telling you the roads do need really.
They do. And in the event of increased rain, of course, it worsens.
Oh, Lord. It's, you know, I suffer from my back, and I'm scared sometimes when I'm going out. I said, didn't you see that hole? Let me, you know, my back. You know, but what can he do? The hole come up on you without you, especially at night, you know? But we really do not go much out at night. But all I can say, you know, I hope to God everything, it's going to take a while. I'm looking, say, 5 years before we can be really relaxed, you know? Right now, I'm happy. But the next thing, I'm blaming VOB news yesterday. I think it was yesterday morning or evening. They talk about Barbados being blacklisted about the passport business. Did you hear that news?
The CIP.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't so. VOB, I'm ashamed of you. You should try and get your facts straight. Right? So, Barbados is not blacklisted for that. So when you say one news, it go out. Some people don't listen to 2 and 3 news like I do. From 5:30, I listen to my news. My radio's on from 5 o'clock in the morning right down until Frostock, right down again until the night. Because I turn off, I don't watch telly much, and I go straight in my bed and listen to my radio again. I'm a VOB freak, you know, see? So I'm just wondering if they could check the news when it comes to putting out news about Barbados, because it goes into the international world and you cannot draw it back, because right now a friend is in New York and she called me and, you know, said, did you hear the news? And I said, yes. She was listening to the news. And I said, no, it's not true. It's some, you know, they got to, you know, make a correction. Barbados is not blacklisted in that way. I don't think Barbados would ever sell their passport, you know, or, well, pray to God I am wrong, or, you know, do anything.
I need to respond, particularly on your last sentence, that you don't think Barbados will sell a passport. You understand the whole, the CIP program and how you attract investors by their ability to purchase a passport for a sum of money, as has been happening in many countries, including the U.S. that has the largest CIP program.
But you see, I don't know about certain things like that. It's only when it was corrected.
Hence why I'm suggesting to you that while there have been some unscrupulous investors who have bought passports in several countries, the region included, the CIP program is not fraught with just fraud or persons who are seeking to money launder or the other things that have been put upon the program to make it a scandalous program. And if you look in the region, particularly Grenada, a number of the OECS countries, they have benefited significantly from a very robust CIP program, and it is not a bad thing. So I have a serious challenge when people speak about it in this negative way and then not look at the other countries, i.e. the US, the UK, and many others who have very attractive programs. The if you go to Canada has some very they actually have, and I would have worked with the Canadian Chamber of Commerce in Atlantic Canada. And they also have an immigration program because they know that they need people coming in to add value to the country, to build up the industry, etc. So they actually make it attractive for persons to come in and pay for passports. So I would beg you to research that first before you come to that conclusion.